Okay, it is 1 minute past six. I'm calling to order the July 2nd, 2019 meeting of the South Kingstown Conservation Commission. First order of business is call to order. Lorraine Jubert.
Here.
Mary Talbot Rabiano.
Here.
Christopher O'Connor.
Here.
J. Vernon Wyman.
Here.
Ann Heffron.
Here.
And Jennifer James will not be here with us tonight. Second order of business is the approval of minutes for the June 4th meeting. I have one comment. Does anybody else have any comments or changes, suggestions? This is just nomenclature. It's in number five, old business. The first sentence explains that the prior draft of the ordinance would allow the town to appoint deputy tree wardens, and by Rhode Island general law, it's the tree warden that appoints deputies. And continuing on in this long sentence, they're creating a new position of town tree arborist. Well, all arborists are tree arborists, so it would just be a town arborist. And I have to tell you, it's small, just nomenclature, and that's all I had. If nobody else has anything, I'll welcome a motion to accept the minutes.
Motion.
Any second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? We are all done. We are accepted. Correspondence and public comments.
I don't believe you have any correspondence.
Okay. At this time, actually, Vern, do you want to talk about the CONCOM state RIAC meeting? Because that would be correspondence. Do you have any notes, just brief things, how it went? What?
Straight, the state RIAC?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, are you referring to the... I'm sorry.
Yeah, what, 3 months ago or something?
Yes, certainly. That was a... It was actually the first time I had been to one of those, obviously, and it was a very good place to really get up to speed on what was happening, particularly on the DEM front, on the legislation at the federal level that I had not been aware of that established the Pawcatuck River as a scenic river. That having gotten to a successful approval level at the time of the just before that meeting, I think the main speaker was rather interesting because he was a gentleman who is responsible for doing the flood identification for concerns of flooding throughout the New England area, and he really. Had an excellent presentation that provided a tremendous amount of statistics on climate change from the perspective of the frequency and more and the greater severity of flooding conditions. Being in a role of having to be the person providing that kind of alert, it was striking to see that kind of data for the local area and how specific it was in terms of giving you a feeling for the local impact of climate change already.
Is that the speaker that was at the environmental summit?
That's what I'm referring to, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. When I talk about the RIAC meeting, I'm just being clarifying, because are you talking about the meeting that both you and I went to at
no.
the university?
Okay. No, this is one that you were agreed to be appointed to as a representative to RIAC for the conservation for South Kingstown.
Right. That's the Rhode Island Association
the airport
of Conservation Commissions or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I had not. I did not attend such a meeting. So
okay.
I went to one at that session.
Yeah.
Information session.
Yeah.
I did not attend another meeting.
Okay. I must be confused. I'll check my notes and check with Ray.
No, I may have made an error as well, but
well, that was still information I hadn't heard. So.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
Anything else? This is also a time when they have public comments. Does anyone wish to address the CONCOM for any particular reason? Okay. We will move on to old business. First is discussion and possible action to endorse amendments to the tree ordinance, Chapter 18.5, and forward to the town manager, who happens to be joining us this evening, Rob Zarnetsky. So basically what we're talking about is the addition of the position of and duties of a deputy tree warden. And Rob, you've looked over
the amendments. I have had a chance to talk to Jay about this. I've had a chance to talk to John Schock about it. I've not spoken to the tree warden.
Okay.
I've also not spoken to any members of the council about it. But in concept, it seems like an appropriate way to address the concerns that the commission has had regarding just timely processing of applications. Mm-hmm. If the issue is that we don't have applications being processed because we've got a part-time official who is responsible for doing all of these applications, it seems an easy fix to say, okay, as soon as we've got our tree arborist, our tree person on the rolls, we can assign that person the duty of deputy and have the tree warden assign that duty to the deputy, and then somebody is in the building all the time, or at least once a day, out in the field, I hope often as well, but in the building and can process those applications as they come in. Seems logical, seems reasonable, and is far preferable to trying to hamstring the tree warden. Our legal counsel was concerned that if we do put limits on the time for processing, they're going to bite us in the butt, and I appreciate that concern.
Who would?
That the limitations will bite us in the
butt. Oh.
That we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we miss one inadvertently because whatever. And once you tie your hands, you're exposing yourself not only to the liability to the applicant, but to everybody else out there. So, for example, the application comes in, it gets missed because it gets missed. The deadline said you were responsible for approving within such a period of time. That time has now lapsed. The tree falls on a passerby. We've got liability that we did not have before. So our lawyers are worried about that. The idea of adding staff to solve a problem that doesn't give the attorneys any agita and seems infinitely reasonable to me.
So in other words, it would accomplish the same goals, but without the liability of having it written in stone.
That is our expectation of how that would work out. Now, I think that we run the risk in either situation of always having something slip through the cracks. So I don't want to say that this alone is going to instantly solve the problem. I do think that it's an institutional response of sufficient magnitude to address the concern.
Another point that had come up many years ago was access to the tree warden. The tree warden does not have a computer, and he and his wife only work out of home. And at one time it had been proposed that there could be an extension here in Town Hall where the messages could be checked from the public. I have an issue with such and such, and then somebody would check that on a, every other day basis, whatever.
So as of yesterday, we have the budget and the authority to hire an arborist. John Chuck hasn't started that process, but I'm expecting him to start the process fairly soon. And as soon as we have an arborist on board, I think that that person should be sort of shadowing the tree warden on all of these things. And there ought to be a single point of contact. Now, ultimately, the authority is going to be vested. The authority vested in the statute is vested in the warden, not the deputy. Nonetheless, we will have one staffer who works for the town whose job it is to make sure that the warden is getting everything he needs to keep doing what he has to do.
Yep. Would the deputy also help in identifying tree work that needs being done around town?
So the job description has not been written, and the way that person is going to be integrated into the department isn't absolutely clear. It's a completely new position.
Right.
And I know that John is going to want to think about not just transitioning this one person into a position that works for this year, but thinking about how that position fits into a long-term tree program. We are hearing more and more, CRFC, most recently, we have to sort of make noise about wind being as big a problem as waves. We're beginning to realize in Rhode Island that a major hurricane is going to hit everybody inland as hard as it hits everybody on the shore. The trees are coming down. I think I've mentioned, everybody who's heard me talk about this, that I had a conversation with the regional director for NOAA about 4 or 5 years ago, and said, look, if you get a 54 hurricane, forget a 38, you get a 54 coming through here, 90% of the trees in southern New England are going to be on the ground. subdivisions built up under them. We have power lines that we did not have in the 50s. There's a whole lot more infrastructure. We are a lot more reliant on that infrastructure. This is some might call it akin to Armageddon. It's a big deal. So John's got a, you know, with that new function, he's got a whole lot of things to be thinking about. I don't want the new arborist to end up being a new clerk. I want the new arborist to be a strategic thinker who's trying to figure out how to make sure that we can get in and out of the community should that be my kid.
It should also be noted that, from my reading of general law, that 14-2 or whatever, that given a particular set of circumstances, the tree warden can appoint a deputy for a day, a week, whatever. We got some. So
yeah, it's a very, very flexible statute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, quite often this is a part-time, other duty is assigned kind of thing. And in South Kingstown, in this case, it's an appointment, very
I think it would be appropriate at this point to vote on at least the language we have in front of us concerning the deputy tree warden. Does any of the members here have any comments on what we're looking at? If not, do I hear a motion to accept the proposed language for amendment to the tree ordinance?
Well, you've been following that more closely than anyone else. Do you have any issues with it?
No, not at all. And as a lot's going to rest on the job description.
Right.
But, so, the tree ordinance in general is pretty much boilerplate for Rhode Island general law, and this fits right in with that. I think as we know more about it, and then particularly when gets incorporated into the whole process, we will have suggestions and could even fine-tune the ordinance.
And we'll have an opportunity to review the job description.
I don't see why not.
I'd like to request it.
Yeah, I don't see any reason. I will tell you, John will bristle at, you know, having to have the committee approve his job description for a man who is going to be working directly for him. I don't see any problem with the committee or the commission seeing it and making
actually
recommendations.
When that time comes up, it would be great to have the tree warden be at that meeting when we're discussing this. Because legally he does the appointing, and if we have any comments, we are an advisory committee to the tree warden.
So, I'm sorry, maybe that's part of the distinction that I'd make here. The warden does not appoint the tree person.
Correct.
Arborist.
Correct.
If the arborist is to be designated,
right, as a deputy,
deputy.
Right. Okay.
So this amendment that's being proposed, the one that, with the deputy tree warden,
right.
This is traceable. This goes back to when Nickerson was here.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, particularly more. Well, that's actually a separate thing, but that would be one thing, and that was what he was talking about with liability. If we set our time frames,
sure.
You know, but practically, if we have somebody else helping with and sort of making sure that everybody gets the right paperwork, and it will effectively do that.
Okay.
So, but we still haven't heard as to whether or not that is going to be legally such that we can put those things into an amendment as well. So this is at least part of that, and so far so good is what I'm thinking.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, I can report out on that. It is legal for you to put a time limit on the period of time in which the town responds.
Oh, I misunderstood.
It is legal. It is just not advisable.
You don't want to do it.
Yeah.
No, our attorney recommends
right.
against it
okay.
because of the liability.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Do I hear a motion to accept these changes to the tree ordinance?
I'll make the motion to accept the changes to the tree ordinance.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
The motion passes. Thank you. Oh, by the way, I had one comment, on the rereading the entire tree ordinance under permit applications, and that would be section 18.5-30. A permit application shall be required for planting, etc., any protected tree with a diameter breast height greater than 2 inches. Well, I've been planting trees all over town that have been containerized trees and have been much smaller than 2 inches, and I've been getting permits for every one of them, and I'm thinking, do I really need to get a permit to do that? So it's a legal issue that I'd be curious. I mean, I mentioned this to Jay, and he said, well, sounds like it, but let's wait, let's check it out. But I was sort of amused that, you know, I've been doing that. Our next order of business is review discussion of the town's open space acquisition policy.
So I said I would look up the habitat information from Amanda Friedis,
yep,
the DES habitat expert. So I made track changes to those ranking criteria. Now,
more
copies?
Thank you.
Oh, no,
we
don't have.
Wait, there's one. Oops, extra one here.
Thanks. My only concern was sort of a matter of the format of procedure, where I like the criteria that we were talking about, the ones listed here on the memo from March 27th. I'm still not sure, does he want to, do you still want it, or Chelsea, or whomever, do you still want to keep the same format of using the number of points for how beneficial each, or what are the benefits for each of these criteria we're talking about? Or is everyone like 1 point, and if a particular parcel coming up has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of those points, then do we get, I mean, how do we want to handle this as far as organizing the final things? Do we want to keep the same format? And if so, we need sub-language for some of these things which are new.
Right. I thought if we could agree, if some of the items are difficult to rank because it's all or nothing.
Right,
cases,
right.
But some of them are easy. So I thought if we could agree on the elements,
okay,
then Jay could work with us on the ranking if he wants to do that.
Okay.
Makes sense, yeah.
Okay. So last time we talked about the habitat issues, but then I went through the other factors in more detail and tried to incorporate the language that I thought might work. But maybe we can start on the second page where it's just the wildlife habitat recommendations. And that's the blue text in the second part of the page. Again, similar to what we heard from the land trust, the large intact parcels, the larger the parcel, the better, and that's exactly what Amanda said. I didn't even mention that we had spoken to land trust people
right
at that time.
Is that parcels or contiguous systems?
Contiguous systems. Contiguous open space. Secondly would be additions to those systems, and that would enhance the connection between large parcels, or eliminate interior holdings of development or other land inside those large parcels, and also maximize the ratio of internal area to edges, so less fragmented edges and just, you know, more solid chunks of connected open space. So she also agreed that unfragmented forest was another important one. And because forest protects water quality and also provides habitat, I didn't view it as just a habitat issue, so I would keep it as separate so that it's, there's a water quality factor. And
would you also want to include things like vernal ponds and such?
I think, well, those are protected wetlands anyway.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Unless it's there's land that borders, it's not a bad idea. If land borders right to the edge of it, then it might require protection. I hadn't thought of that. So, for example, and then if we established a ranking system,
for unfragmented forest, it could be large forest acreage. Unfragmented forest is ranked in two ways, greater than 500 acres and greater than 250, I think. So there are some ways to rank that. Adding wetlands might not be a bad idea. We already had, she also suggested cold water streams. Well, I actually asked her about that because that's another thing that's also related to water quality and habitat. So around the state, there's been an issue with from water withdrawals and maybe with increased temperatures, the fish that normally live in streams are getting taken over by fish that normally live in ponds because the streams are getting so warm. So that, and also it's a kind of an indicator of good water quality because the cold water fish generally are found in streams where the impervious cover in the watershed is only like 4%. So that's another factor.
I had a question regarding water. Is land over aquifers already restricted?
Not in many ways. That's why it's a separate, but it's a separate issue on the other side.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't see it. Yeah, got it.
But before we go further, the other two factors she recommended was based on the DEM wildlife map, DEM environmental, not the resource map, but the conservation opportunities map that is related to the wildlife action plan. That shows unfragmented forests. I have just a few of these. The areas in red, the green cross is critical or uncommon habitat. She recommended that there are some value judgments about how those are selected, but for one example is pitch pine forest, which is considered unique and valuable for various types of habitat in this area. She also mentioned that type requires management, like regular burning and things like that, so I don't know if that's practical for the town to acquire. And then the other one was high value / high vulnerability habitat, and that's the red. And she said that those are exemplary habitat types, information collected by Rick Enzer, who used to be a biologist at DEM. So those are the two that she singled out. I was a little surprised she didn't recommend the one we've normally been using, natural heritage areas, but she said that those are heavily weighted towards plant species just based on who's been collecting the data. And the blobs are so large that it basically
not well
out of the state. And it's very difficult to document those. Chris Drake left, and is there anyone working on that now?
No.
She said it's mostly volunteers that are just reporting.
It is.
Reporting findings.
It's the New England Wild Plant Society.
Oh,
right.
But there's
part
no
of Natural History Survey does it.
Okay. Yeah, Natural History Survey. So there's no one. It's very difficult to find out why something would be designated in that under that category.
Yeah.
So that's what she recommended, and then just in terms of maps. I did map out the watersheds. I also have a couple of these. The watersheds that contain cold water streams are in blue on this DEM environmental resource map. But it doesn't mean that all the streams in those sub-watersheds have cold water streams. But you can identify it by the 303D streams. And it comes up in a data table, but Carol Baker or somebody else would have to make a map of them. And then the aquifer areas are in beige, and the overlap between the two is in gray. So a lot of the town is in aquifer recharge area and cold water streams.
Those maps are good.
You can just do these online. It doesn't require any
access to this. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
FYI.
thanks to DEM, they've done it.
They did a great map gallery at DEM.
Yeah. We just go to DEM and.
DEM yeah, they have like a map.
Oh,
map
okay.
gallery.
Just go to the DEM.gov website.
Mm-hmm.
Look on maps.
Okay.
A whole bunch of them come up.
Yeah.
Find you like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The
best,
the
it is impressive.
Environmental resource
right.
map.
That's what I used to.
Great.
If you need a tutorial, bring the laptop next time.
Oh, got one.
It's kind of easy once you start playing with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
So, I don't know if there's any discussion of those, but I did incorporate those elements into the ranking on the first page and added a few more of my own comments. So should we go back to the first page?
Yep.
Okay. So, open space that preserves unique historic and cultural features. I thought that was a lot like the one we had a separate one for scenic vistas and landscapes. So
mm-hmm.
it seemed redundant to list them separately, so I combined them.
Mm-hmm.
Then I increased the ranking to number 8 because that's what scenic vistas and landscapes was. Then agricultural lands is there. I'm wondering if that could be interpreted as not active farmland. You know, it could be based on soils, you know how there are farmland
it is
soils.
Based on
yeah.
soils.
It is.
So
okay.
I thought it would be better to go back to the old way that we had. We had, before it was called farmland preservation.
Yep.
So I'm thinking active farmland might be a better way to describe our intent. If we don't really care if it's just the soil. But active farmland is what we have in mind.
Yeah.
And I like that you excluded turf.
Yeah, turf is horrible. And
yeah.
runoff from the cockerel
yeah.
farm
yep.
is
yep.
amazing. Since they flattened it all out and
mm-hmm.
graded it, it's amazing how much. And now they're irrigating, you know, further
yeah.
drawing down the streams. And they fertilize the wet areas
yeah,
all
no.
the time, just
yeah.
runs directly off.
Yeah.
But that I would think that we would need to exclude nursery crops. They're not really environmentally friendly. It's not really considered agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not like, it's not food production. Solar, we would want to, even though you could use, you know, you're allowed 30% or so. Is it 35 or 25 for solar at
the
farm?
It depends on the zoning district.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly 10%.
Okay. But I wouldn't want any solar if we're buying it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we wouldn't want that. Or commercial compost operation, it's not really farming. Indoor grow facilities, whether it's lettuce or pot, you know, it doesn't matter. The mushrooms, like
mm.
in West Kingston.
Yep.
Horses and livestock are not very environmentally friendly. And even though you might specify using standard practices for manure management, that's impossible to regulate
mm.
and maintain, you know, check that.
Mm.
And livestock, other than that, what would normally be allowed it for residential use, is fine. It's just not a horse stable or a herd of cows. Then the next one was areas of, we had kept areas of anticipated sea level marsh migration. But I'm thinking those might also make really good sites for off-site mitigation when DEM allows. When they require mitigation,
mm-hmm.
that would be more effective mitigation than what they're currently doing by requiring them to update another house's septic system to advanced treatment. And then we already have the next few areas abutting bodies of fresh and salt water. Maybe wetlands could come under that, including valuable wetlands.
What critical and environmentally sensitive areas?
And other wetlands?
Yeah.
Because this deals with
yeah.
wetlands. And then I kind of viewed critical and environmentally sensitive areas as the habitat, including water, but that would include, that could be expanded to include.
On the back page, yeah.
The other things. Unfragmented forest is separate. Groundwater resources. But if we're protecting a groundwater resource,
then we wouldn't want it used for agriculture or active recreation.
Right.
And then watersheds, in order to protect water quality, land within, ideally forested land, but land with undeveloped land within watersheds of swimming beaches, shellfish and waters, and cold water streams. That has both water quality value and habitat value if it's forested.
That's good.
Oh, and then the issue of pocket parks. I thought that could be expanded from areas of small green space and also sites that can be depaved, which towns are
good
doing
idea.
Now.
Yeah.
Or even, you could even do it in parking lots now that everyone's buying online instead of going to the store. Within village centers and densely developed areas. So that would be for pocket parks and green stormwater infrastructure as well, or both in one spot.
Mm-hmm. As a digression, by the way, the city of Cranston actually bought up residences at market value because of the severe flooding in the area, just taking out all the streets and letting it form back, which I thought was amazing. Expensive, but amazing.
Right. So there's a few more on the other side. Public access points, areas abutting existing permanently protected open space. That was one we added last time. And then areas located on barrier beaches. But I thought we're losing those, so I don't know if we want to buy them.
Mm.
And then I think it's important to add another consideration of the ability of the town to maintain the site and protect public safety. Because oftentimes, an open space parcel can just be an attractive nuisance.
Mm.
Yeah.
I live across from a land trust property, and it's amazing how much trash it gets.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and the other problem of, you know, if it's next to a residential area, then it gets taken over by the residents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right, which we addressed with the conservation developments.
Mm.
It's a difficult one.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
You're welcome. So I guess, Jake, if anyone is happy to discuss it further if you like, but just maybe for the sake of saving time, Jake can review it and maybe he
Right. I'd like you to send it to him and I'll make sure it's on the agenda Perfect.
So I think one thing we were hoping you all would do, in addition to sort of clarifying all the standards, is make a recommendation on sort of whether you want it to be weighted or ranked or, you know, 1, 2, 3 points, right? Like,
well, that's what I was asking in the beginning because it's confusing.
It is. And I think the way it's written now, it's all up for change if that's what you want to do. If you want to say, give everything a weight, let's say. So what, some things are 1, some things are 1.5, some things are 0.5, right? If you maybe consider the value against each other.
I thought of that too, and then I thought, God, isn't it like a parent choosing a favorite child?
Right.
Because these are all, I mean, we weeded out a couple, and I think all of them have.
They all have merit.
I mean, scenic value, sure.
I mean, I think the other thing you could think about is maybe it's not based on point system at all. Maybe it's based on the review of the CONCOM.
Mm-hmm.
And your sort of determination about those things that exist, right? I mean, I think the way the open space policy was written originally, although I wasn't here back then, was with this idea that multiple applications would come in all at once and you'd be ranking them against each other and there would be sort of a point system.
Right.
I don't know how many times.
I don't think that's ever happened that way.
Yeah.
So.
So I'm wondering whether that point system has ever been used.
Well, and we used it when something comes up, we use it and we rank it, but it feels sort of artificial, right? It's like, what am I ranking it against?
Right.
What we were originally hoping was that you guys would not only think about the criteria, but the process.
I know.
Totally.
Yeah.
As a process
that should
be used in the future and make recommendations.
I would add a couple of elements to that. One, the amount of open space in town is already great, so we're going to have to start figuring out how to make acquisitions strategically just so that we're taking advantage. And I see the criteria here or just adjacent to already permitted. That kind of thing is a strategic decision, and that's going to become more important in the future. It's also going to become more important in the future because the programs are going to change. We know that the council has asked for information about splitting the funding source between open space acquisition and affordable housing acquisition and preservation.
Yep, yep.
So I don't see those pressures going away. I think that folks are coming to an understanding. I don't think we're there yet, but I think there's sort of an understanding that we need to have good natural habitat and we have to have good human habitat. And somehow we've got to come to the right balance here. The pressure, I've got a map, I don't know if I've shown this group, but I've got a satellite image of the eastern seaboard at night. And if you look at the eastern seaboard at night, from Washington to southern Maine, the seashore is lit up like a Christmas tree, except for Charlestown, Matunuck, and Little Compton. Every place else, 95 in particular, but every place else, there's just lights up and down. We've got something really, really unique here. The work of the Conservation Commission, the work of the Planning Department, the work of the folks who have been preserving South Kingstown for the last 40 years is apparent from outer space. But what's also apparent from outer space is that the pressures that drove everybody else to build are encroaching on us.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
That's so are we talking about two different pots of money? Because the money that was allocated was for open space. That was not allocated for affordable housing, I don't believe.
So if you're talking the bonded funds?
Yeah.
No, that's not.
Okay, all right.
But I will also say that the accounting of the bonded funds, those monies have been spent many times over. That money is gone. It was for open space and recreation facilities. And we've spent it. In fact, the sort of complicating thing about this is what happened, God, I don't remember the date. Anybody remember the date of the bond? It was 8, 10 years ago or something?
No, I don't know.
It was quite some while ago.
It wasn't like 06 or 08?
Yeah, so it was quite a while ago. What happened in that election was the voters authorized the town to issue bonds. I can't even remember the dollar amount. It was $6 or $8 million, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Authorized the town to enter to issue bonds for open space acquisition and recreation facilities.
Overwhelmingly.
Yep. It is not perfectly clear to me that the town ever issued all of those bonds, but it is perfectly clear to me that we've spent more than $8 million in acquiring open space in the last 10, 12 years. We've done it using property tax transfer tax monies and general fund monies. Rather than borrow, we've just taken it out of
Well, I think there would have to be a separate ranking list for affordable housing because that's very different.
Yes, very different. And really, the Affordable Housing Collaborative's purview as well. It's not a question of combining those two programs. Although they're talking about using strategies that are very similar, it's really a question of bifurcating the funding source, the transfer tax, so that money is going.
So would that be subject to public vote?
It would be subject to council vote, not a referendum.
So it would be discussed in the budget.
It would be discussed during the budget. That's correct.
So I think to Rob's point about sort of being strategic, it makes sense to me that you would craft a policy or a program that would let you say no when it makes sense, right? Let the town say no when it makes sense. Because you have a limited amount of money, you should have criteria that says, well, you know, we could spend it on this, but is it the most valuable way to spend that money, or do we want to save it and use it next year for something else that might be more valuable? And that's what it is to sort of be strategic with this, is to think about what the most important things are for you and craft a program that says, that sort of clearly identifies, this is what we're striving at. Maybe if something comes in and it doesn't quite hit that mark, you have a way to say, well, no, we're not going to fund that one. We're going to wait until we get something that's more valuable. And I don't know what those things are. I'm hoping that you guys sort of parse all that out. But right now, the way the criteria work is pretty much everything is fundable, and there isn't really a good way to say, well, this one's not quite as good as that, because there is that limited sort of pool of money, and you know, we want to be as strategic as possible.
But we also don't have any sites identified.
No, not specific sites.
And those so two points get to, I think, an important point, and that is, what's the theme? What's the overarching philosophy going to be for conservation efforts in town? Publicly funded conservation efforts in the next 10 years should achieve the following goals. I don't know what those are. Certainly the ranking criteria, the criteria don't really give us a clear picture of what those are. They give us a bunch of things that are important, and we give a number to every application that comes in, and so long as it's above, whatever, 60.
Above 14 or
yeah,
something.
Okay. It scores above a D. It's fundable. It doesn't tell me anything about whether it's a wise buy for us compared to our goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, my own bias is to protect water quality, because I feel that over time the habitat will be lost just because we can't afford the bylaw. And there are larger tracts elsewhere in the state.
I hear that. I will tell you, when I came to town a year and a half ago, my first question to the planning department, well, first two questions were, how fast is erosion taking beach? And why isn't Route 1 a commercial corridor? It doesn't make any sense. Why isn't Route 1 a corridor? They can tell me how fast the beach was eroding. They had more difficulty explaining the cultural drive area.
Because they didn't want it to look like Route 2 at large.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that a lot, but that doesn't really explain what was going on. And after thinking about it and listening to a debate over the Boy Scout property, I realized it's just a parkway. It's an access road to a park-like setting. What the community is about is preserving that park-like setting.
Right.
Okay, cool. Now I get it. But and then you get to this satellite image and you realize it's a truly unique park-like setting. There's no other like it on the seashore. There's no other like it, maybe Little Compton, on the Atlantic coast. That's a big deal. Figuring out how to preserve this last place where the forest comes to the sea is a big deal. But we need to be really smart, because we also have, and I was just doing calculations, pressures that are talking about 6,000 and 7,000 units of affordable housing to meet with the state code. We can't do both. We cannot build 7,000 units of housing in the next 5 to 10 years and also preserve this forest corridor to the sea.
I was listening to GBH, All Things Considered, they were talking about, they also have, I don't know if it's 40% that exists, you know, what the percentage of affordable housing has to be, but only, whatever it is, only 20% of the 300 and some odd communities in Massachusetts have met that.
Yeah.
And the question is, well, now what? What do we do?
Well, it's also an unattainable goal, because the more we develop,
right.
The more the greater our requirements.
Right.
It's like we're chasing our tail.
Yeah.
That 7,000 units is if you build only units that have contributing affordable units. If you always dedicate 25% to get down to 10%, it's about 7,000, 7,500.
Well, one way would be to change zoning.
Yep.
Increase the lot sizes. There's subdivisions in fragmented forests. You know, even on North Road, the forest land there, why is it zoned 1 acre? It could be two. And we can eliminate the density, the bonus density in the conservation development ordinance, which is totally unnecessary because they're making enough money with shorter roads.
I don't want to hijack this meeting, but I think you're exactly right. It's zoning and it's infill, and it's the most recent thought around this that folks are having is do the same thing the land trust did. Preserve affordable housing by buying the rights to maintain it as affordable housing. Right. We have plenty of modest income housing throughout South Kingstown. There are, in fact, about a third of the housing units in South Kingstown right now are are valued by the assessor at prices that would qualify as affordable housing. Now that doesn't mean everybody living in them is low income, but some number of those units are market or affordable.
So bringing you back to open space policy, I think Jay and the planning department now and after I go are open to whatever suggestions you have relative to scoring process, who makes the advisory recommendation. All of that I think is fair game that we can talk about and make a recommendation on.
I could review what we had before and compare it with this, and I can maybe throw out some ideas. So and then Jay can take it from there, you know, and the comments that come up next time.
Sure. Well, I definitely want to put this on the agenda for next time as well. Okay. Any other points we want to make to this, or do we want to move on to the next item? Next item in the business is advisory opinion procedures in context of zoning applications. This is in relation to Section 504, primarily?
No. That's just an advisory opinion, right?
Oh, he's on 5C. This one.
Old business
stuff. Advisory opinion procedures in context of zoning applications.
I ran out of time. I'm sorry.
Yep, it's regarding the application of the Conservation Commission for advisory opinion installation.
Right, I wanted to review, we had some standard recommendations before.
And we wanted to add best management practices.
Right, and I wanted to also review what other towns are requiring for DMPs, but I just ran out of time.
Okay.
I apologize.
I'd like to continue it for that reason, because Jay was holding up, language that we would use based on,
right.
He needed that, and actually, if you wanted to forward that to him and ask him to forward it to us for consideration for next time, because legally he could do that.
Then you'll have it in the packets.
Okay. Does anybody have any objections to postponing this discussion until next time? Okay, and I'd like to go ahead and do that. We now have some new business. Advisory opinion to the Planning Board concerning 920 SURF development, combined conceptual master plan and preliminary plan review, major land development project located at 920 Trinity Beach Road, Assessor's Plat 92-2, Lot 53. Is anybody here representing 920? Okay. Well, I wish they were here to give some overview of what we're doing, but we did see this in TRC.
Mr. Chairman, you're being offered the opportunity to talk to the petition if you'd like.
Oh, I thought you. Oh, I didn't understand. You represent 920?
I can't listen. I can't hear that.
Come on up to the table.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, standard procedure here. And if you could just state your name for the record.
Kevin Finnegan.
Great. And could you give us an overview of the project? We do have information here, too, but if you could tell us what you want to do. And
which project are we on?
920 Surf.
The Surf Shop and Restaurant.
Basically, in short, it was, we don't know if a surf shop will work, we're pretty sure it will. So we split the building in half. I own the surf shop from Bob Fox earlier, a couple of years ago.
The one that's across from the beach?
Yeah, the one that was across
right.
from the beach. He wanted to retire. We had no place to put it. I didn't want to see it. You know, I kind of believe, like you guys, want Matunic to be. It's part of, you got the open space, you got all that stuff, but Matunic's a cool little place. I'm lucky to be there, so to speak. So I didn't want to see a surf shop disappear. So I bought the entity of the surf shop, but we didn't know where to put it, so me and Bob sold surfboards and stuff online. And then the pizza shop came up for sale, and we came to the town and asked for, we got the signage permits, the building permits, and if I could put the containers there temporarily until we see the Surfshop Grill, and then we had a complaint, I believe, triggered it. You know, we got the electrical permit already, we got the signage permit, and the town realized, we realized that, you know, it's a major development by doing that. So then we just backed up, went through the whole process. That's why I'm not here to say or do anything. It's basically to see the process.
Okay.
And so we put the wall up, and it'll, you know, the wall in between the buildings have a little surf shop on the side,
yep.
Pizza shop there. The containers, one's a storage, and one's an extension of the, you know, the surf shop. So we got preliminary approval on that the other day. Everything, you know, we met all the criterias. And, you know, it's, I think it got passed. And then I heard about this. I just wanted to see the next process. You know, that's it.
David, you attended the TRC.
Right.
Were there any issues with
that? Yeah, there were, concerning runoff from the buildings. The rain garden design, I don't think we had a formal design for the rain gardens, just that that's conceptual at this point. And so the main question, therefore, is this all adequate? I mean, we all know what a compromised area this is. And any additional runoff, any addition to the water table is just going to be crazy. So, but that was the consensus. And from there, I think it was, I guess they were not coming back to the TRC. It was going to go to the planning board after that.
Yeah, so just as an update, I think when this application was ready for the planning board review, it was passed the Conservation Commission's meeting deadline for last month.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it went to the planning board. It was on the planning board's agenda last week. Kayla thought that it would take two meetings for the planning board to review it and approve it, but it only took one, so they actually approved it last week.
Oh.
So if you have comments now, those would get wrapped into our final plan review,
okay.
Which is the next stage. But just to sort of give you, we anticipated that it would take two, and it only took one, and just sort of the timing of it all didn't work out quite the way it usually does.
Well, how did discussion of the design of the rain gardens
go? It wasn't there.
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
I wasn't there. It would be.
It was Kayla.
Kayla.
Well,
Jay was there.
There's no design in the materials we have. It's just the location.
Right.
Yeah, and the preliminary plan submittal would have had all of that information because it's engineering review for preliminary plan status.
So you mentioned wetness and high water table. Does it flood? Because it listed as a 7-foot water table.
Mm.
I don't know the specific water table for that area, but I'm just thinking that entire area is wet. And I don't know if I can't.
That's a pretty high point where that restaurant is.
Yeah.
A pretty high point.
Okay.
Does it drop off behind it though?
Yeah,
it does.
Off to one side,
right.
Back,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I heard that wrong. We hired RP Engineering, the engineer, what little water was say on the containers. The rest of it's all been there. The engineer said that. The ground on that side of the road is very good. It's good ground. You go back, it's wet. You know, it's wetlands and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The rain garden, they decided just to go around the whole thing rather than have it like a little drain comes off. So the roof's going to drip down the side and then around the whole, that one or two flat roofs.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to accept, you know, that would be the only added, say, water runoff.
Mm-hmm.
But very minimal, but it's the rain garden is around.
Okay.
Around the perimeter.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Instead of having like a separate one.
Of the storage units.
Yeah, the two storage units. Yeah.
It looked, in the drawing, it looked like it was raised off the ground, is it?
That was part of the whole temporary switch into permanent. And that's what kind of triggered. It was kind of like, if it's just there, and I didn't want it to ever look like two containers. I wanted to,
right.
do it and pretty up a little bit. And, you know, I asked. But then, so we backed off, so for a year just sat there looking at two containers.
Right.
So that picture is just going to pretty it up, put some beach grass and things.
That's ideal, because then the water can infiltrate.
The water
will
want to.
So you won't be increasing the pervious area.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, learning from everybody here, kind of this process, what we talked about, you know, you this morning, is kind of like just, you know, when my parents were there, they were tents, and then Downtown Petunic was like the big, you know, you had a hotel, you had that stuff. So just nothing to really build off of that, just secure what's there into a modern view, you know, water runoff, raise them up to sea level rises. So it's kind of like a lot of those things. In the meantime, we got, you know, just a little surf shop. The runoff is there, and then that plantings that you, putting around the whole property. Mm-hmm.
I also noticed that there's some brick pavers or some sort of pavement.
The pavers have always been there. Probably when Harold built the building, a little after.
The brick pavers?
Oh, yeah, those pavers. Okay. There's a hibachi come up there.
Yeah.
It's been, been there for a long, for 10, 12, 15 years. What we're doing is would be the rain goes through it, the engineer said, it goes into the ground where you want it, and then the roof, flat roofs where it doesn't go into the roof, it comes off the side and goes into the rain gutters. So what we're adding that, just to clean it up, would be, permeable rain goes through the deck, that's what
the wooden called. Ones. The wooden ones would allow.
Yeah.
Could you use all the wooden with spaces in between instead of the brick?
The brick ones are there.
They're there.
All
right.
I mean, if this all works.
It's already there.
If I knew this process was this long, I probably would have kept the surf shop closed for another year or two. But it was a great learning process for the bigger picture, say. So kind of like the better I can learn what you need and want, I can provide it before it's asked. That's what I want to add to you this morning. It's like a perfect opportunity of, the right, that open space from the highway. I've been in planes, right? From Route 95 to the ocean, there is no others, That space is down there, so, what's there, you're just trying to preserve it, not only open space, but the actual, because, you need the open space for pipe and floaters and things like that, but there's generations of people coming and returning, and, people that live in Wakefield enjoy that aspect too, so it's like,
So, how much planting is planned for the perimeter? I noticed, I know there's Rosa Rugosa, the beach rose there, as well as knotweed that I guess occupies much of that. Is that being proposed to be altered?
It's in the plan. We got a landscape architect.
It's on the last sheet there.
Yeah.
So the landscape architect, one of the couple of concerns was knotweed's crazy. It's there. The neighbors love it for the separation, but until it gets to the foundation. So I think we're going to do what we can, then probably come back to you in a year or three and address getting rid of the knotweed and put something that's more.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of things, I've lived in that house across the street for my whole life, and whatever you put on the porch with the salt there is difficult.
Mm.
I think the first plan that they put in, it wouldn't work just with the southwest wind and, the fog and the salt air. Out of my expertise, but just try to plant tomato. Can't do it.
Beyond your experience.
Okay. I did notice that you proposed excavating a foot of soil where the knotweed is. That wouldn't be deep enough to take up all the roots, though, right?
We're not trying to.
No.
Like right now, it's kind of a Mr. and Mrs. Potts live right behind us, and I was cutting it down, and they're like, "What are you doing?" And I thought it was, invasive. It's not invasive to me, but they kind of, besides the invasive part, they like the green wall. They call it a green wall. They like it. It makes it separate. They don't have to walk all the way down Bonnie. They walk through and come through the property or the beach. So I didn't really realize the invasiveness of it. It's been in my porch, across the street forever. It goes in like a day or three. I never really thought of it as invasive from that until the other night. So what is on the property is there, but if it becomes a problem like in a year or three when everything's working right, that'd be be pretty easy to get rid of. Not easy, but get rid of it again.
So I noticed that in the original CRMC assent, they required a 125-foot buffer of undisturbed vegetation to the closest wetland. Are you reducing that distance, or are you keeping it the same?
It's the same. The only little thing was, it's a weird piece of property, the Mrs. Potts and Mr. Potts property behind us. My property line goes exactly to the, say their house is this, goes right to the front door, and then goes around it. Because I think he owned all three houses at one time, so it wasn't an issue. I don't know how it was sold that way, and I don't know how they didn't do the due diligence, say when they bought it. I didn't bring that up. What we're going to do is their front lawn's been cut for, ever since I can remember. But technically, we'd take that, 100 square feet, and put it on my property in their front lawn way back. So I think that's what CRMC was talking about. as far as like not going back there and cutting anything. Yeah. That whole back pot from the pizza surf shop all the way back, and then Mrs. Potts, I think she owns 8 acres and she's only on like a third of an acre, and the rest of it goes all the way back to that strip of land that actually they were trying to put 24 condos on. That's another thing that I kind of more addresses you in the morning was, it was going off kilter, is that clearly what I want to do or the Mattoon people want to do, it's not me anymore. I feel like I can't take it up, so to speak. I think the seawall and the rules and what happened the past 5 or 6 years is behind us, and I think we all went through it pretty well. I mean, it's got nothing to do with this, but I hate to see, permit it right, like Mr. Landry was saying this morning, do whatever's there and lock it in before, if I die, I don't think a lot of people at this moment pick up that ball. And I mean that whatever, to somebody, a developer, I'm not a developer, so that's a good note, I think, for what you're going to talk about the green and everything's out.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any comments? So we're here to make this an advisory opinion to the planning board. In other words, they've already approved the first stage and they want any comments just as an addendum to that. Do we have any further things that we want to add as in our recommendation to the planning board?
Well, I'm thinking keeping the storage units elevated to prevent increase in runoff, and ensure that the rain garden design meets DEM requirements, and so it meets their water quality standard and infiltration standards. And that the erosion sediment controls be properly designed and installed based on the handbook. And I did notice.
You mean during construction?
Yeah. And all those stormwater, those erosion controls would have to be installed before any work is done on the property. And that's noted in your plans.
Yeah, this is definitely. I mean, I might say that like that forever. There's no construction. It's already
right.
Above the ground on pavers. There's no. We're not going to go. When you approve this, I'm not going down there and digging anything up.
Right.
It pretty much is what it is.
Right.
In 3-5 years, if it's all going good in that bigger plan, then we would. I'd love to hear by whatever the latest great. Updated thing is down to the point is like self-sustained as far as energy or runoff or if you did a bigger thing.
Are you okay with keeping the storage units elevated on a permanent basis?
Right now they're elevated. Yeah.
Right. If you want to, if we stipulated that, that would be fine with you. That they remain like 2-5 years down the road.
So
keep them elevated.
Yeah. What else would I do? What is it?
Put them on the ground. What would be the other option?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was just a temporary transitional thing. Okay.
Yeah, I don't see it going on the ground.
I misunderstood.
Your reasons and mine, they're pretty durable. I'm sure they rust on it.
Are we ready to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Sure.
The applicant is proposing to, I recommend that we provide some recommendations for the final design. And that would be ensuring that the storage units remain elevated to prevent increase in runoff and avoid displacing flood water that would increase flooding impacts. The stormwater BMPs must be designed based on the DEM stormwater manual to meet the water quality, all the minimum standards, including groundwater infiltration and water quality treatment.
I believe that was already
And erosion controls must be installed, designed and installed based on the updated Rhode Island handbook and installed before site work is done. And that also native plants. I know that there is a landscaping plan, but I'm not an expert in native planting, so as long as that's reviewed to make sure it's native type planting, that would be preferable.
Anybody have anything to add to that motion? In that case, do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay. And further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. thank you for coming in.
Do you get copies of it publicly? Will you get copies of them and help that earn the voice?
You'll get a copy of the motion letter.
Okay. This is just a recommendation to the planning board. You'll be communicating from now on with the planning board.
Kayla will send that to you.
Great, awesome. Thank you. This is so a little bit more interesting.
Okay, I'm just taking a second to find my other piece of work. Right. Next order of business is discussion of the town's proposed 350 seawall project on the Tunic Beach Road. I asked this to put on the agenda because I got this from CRMC because of public notice of open discussion and prior to July something, without going into it. Did anybody else get a thing like this? It was a request to comment on the project. The town's proposed 350 seawall.
I got it.
Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah,
right. So my understanding is that any further, any kind of seawall is going to increase erosion on either side of the seawall. So, for instance, at the town beach where there is a great deal of erosion, right next to it is that huge seawall for the RV park, if you will. I'm just wary of extending this project, and I just wanted to get some feedback. I mean, that would be my original position that I would have used to comment on this, and I just wanted more feedback from you guys who may know more than I do about it. To help me with formulate what I wanted to say.
So just as a procedural note, CRMC is soliciting comments until the 17th of this month.
Okay.
So if the committee wanted to submit, well, boy, you're going to make John happy, but if he wanted to submit comments, it would have to be by that date.
Okay.
There will be a public hearing, and there will be an opportunity to comment at the public hearing as well. They do a public comment period, and then
would you happen to know if I received this as chair of the Conservation Commission, because that wasn't part of the email, or it's literally open to anybody?
It's open to
okay.
Anyone who is indicating interest in being notified.
Okay.
Almost any day, imagine.
Okay. Does anybody have any other further thoughts as to, I mean, it seems sort of black and white to me. Does anybody have any idea about, well, why does the town want to do that?
Because that's the only road, that's the only egress, you can only get in and out that
and
way,
the water
there's
line.
Hundreds of people moving down there.
And there's a water line.
And there's a water line.
Yeah, which would be lost.
It's deemed essential to the preservation of the road. The road is being threatened, and if we cannot figure out how to protect it,
it's what's on that corner constantly.
The road
every
is in jeopardy being washed away, which would isolate the Tunic
and Jerusalem, for that matter.
And Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Right. Hundreds of folks would be.
I mean,
okay.
You'd have to begin a process of abandoning all that.
The expense involved is unbelievable. Not to mention that the village would be lost.
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, next order of business is discussion amending the plastic reduction ordinance to include plastic straws. This was my idea for two reasons. One is that it's becoming more and more popular. Businesses are doing it on their own, either substituting paper straws that are good for like an hour and a half of submersion in water, or if offering permanent straws, such as Auntie's Kitchen on Robinson Street, that you would bring back that are reusable. They're a very heavy plastic that's not just going to be flexible, and that obviously is not going to end up as trash and go into the sewer drains. And third thing is that when we were drafting the original plastic reduction ordinance, it wasn't a plastic bag elimination ordinance. It was worded that way. And I think I heard that from the town manager at the final hearing we had, that it was worth so that we can do this. And The idea at the time was, why aren't we doing it now? Well, let's wait and see how the public reacts to the first phase, and then see if we want to go forward with it. And I think that the people, businesses, and certain municipalities are already going forward with it. I mean, there are already precedences that we relied on for our bag ordinance. So I'm just wondering, wanted to open it up to discussion. We don't have to have any kind of formal thing on it now, but do you think it's time to move on and add plastic straws?
I would say yes, but there definitely is an avenue to do that without
It could be as an amendment to the ordinance that we passed.
Well, the council would still have to approve it.
Right.
But I'd say, why stop there? Let's ban locker rooms and other things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's a huge problem, right?
That is.
Sure. 4th of July, they have lights on those things. Over the salt pond.
I would add a little context around this. If you've been following the plastic bag ban of the state legislature, that plastic bag ban is actually not a ban at all. It's a preemption of the local bans and a requirement that bags be thicker than what we currently use. But it's not a ban. It will simply result in the people using thicker plastic bags as convenience bags. I think they go to 0.04 mils.
Right.
The standard bag is something like 0.02 or something. So it's not really going to be a ban. It is a complete preemption, though. It had passed.
It would override our ordinance?
It would completely preempt any local plastic bag ban. So going to straws is the next strategy. It's just a way to lift a straw to the
Did it pass in both?
It has passed
in one house.
In the Senate. It has not passed in the House, and it had been held. I don't know what happened over the weekend. I don't know how it finished up. But my point is, that was a ban on the plastic bags. It was not a total preemption on straws or Mylar balloons. It was just plastic bags. So there's some strategy involved here. If there was a complete ban, then municipalities saying, fine, then we'll deal with straws. You take care of that. You're fine. Go ahead. We're going to do straws and Mylar. If there wasn't an effective preemption of local regulation, then it might make sense to find out what happened and how to make sure that the preemption doesn't happen. So it may, my point is, the timing of a straw ban, I think, depends on what ultimately happened with that bill because we don't want to offend if we don't need to.
Right.
We do offend partially.
Now, didn't the session end? Isn't the session over?
Yes,
it is over.
Yes.
But we don't know the
status. I just don't know the result.
Okay.
I tried to get our state reps. They're probably exhausted.
That thing now. All right.
I'll call again.
Let's continue this. In the meantime, I'll ask Jay to keep track of what happened at the session. And
I think it's, if there are other communities that you know of that have enacted such a ban, it might be helpful to start gathering research because we know that process
can take a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't necessarily say you have to hold it until your next meeting or three meetings from now.
Just right.
You could start doing little bits, just like you did in the plastic bag thing.
Research, yep.
Start with whatever you can do now.
Chris, could you help with that?
Sure.
Okay.
Do you know Chris often?
I have no idea.
And just one element to that has, because the plastic bags are obviously part of a commercial transaction virtually, and restaurants have a similar type of relationship with that. But do some of these bans actually prevent the sale of them, say in a grocery store for home use or anything like that?
Yeah, that would be good to know.
Because in some ways, that's just as impactful, if you will.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But it has a different context, and that it affects households, not or just sales within the state.
And I think when you look at Block Island's ban on balloons, on latex balloons, that was a ban on the sale, and you cannot, even if it's just at your house, you cannot have a balloon.
Right.
It goes the other way.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Sure is.
Latex and
Mylar.
I think it was Mylar too.
You said it was latex as well as?
I think Rob said it says it, he thinks it's both. I thought it was just latex. Latex or
some
balloons.
Yeah.
Generally.
If we got favorable, you know, info on this, is this something we want to move forward on? So we'll keep it going for discussion next time.
So I think that just the council has acted on this recently when it became apparent that preemption was part of the state statute.
Yeah.
They passed a resolution saying no, we don't preempt. This is working here in South Kingstown. We support the program because it's been working. Don't preempt this program. I think my read of the council comments on that were such that they'd support doing something to either preserve what's there or expand what's there. They don't want to put the preservation of what's there at jeopardy. That's
right.
That's the
point. Right. All right, so we need to collect data on other expansions.
This is a complete aside, but I thought of you because I did takeout recently, and the takeout was presented in a box,
mm-hmm.
a nicely packaged box that was recyclable, and they gave us utensils, wooden utensils.
Wooden?
Yes, and I saved them. My son hijacked them, though. I don't know where they are, but... Just to bring in to show you.
Where was that?
It was on the Tavern on Main.
Mm. Tavern on Main. They are one of the ones that does not use straws.
There you go.
I got the takeout from the Muse, and their containers are paper, but they actually say that they will compost. And we've, you know, in our compost pile, there are some very old compostable plastic bags. So I'm currently soaking them in a pail of water just to see what happens.
Yeah.
So.
Those are plastic bags that are compostable?
They were marketed that way as green bags for inside compost pails, and they're not. They're not. But the takeout containers I got from the Muse say that they are compostable, and they seem to be a cardboard, a paper, but...
Some of those are made out of soy.
Okay.
Like they have soy utensils that are very, they're more durable, they're harder than the plastic ones.
Right, right.
Are those the ones that Whole Foods gives out? Aren't those soy? If you go to Whole Foods and get their to go, I think they have the soy utensils.
Trader Joe's is
that used to be when I was in the province.
But they have them at the conference, this environmental summit, the summit that I went to, that's what they use.
Yeah.
They are very stiff.
When I was in Florida, we, we're at a little restaurant at the end of a dock, and instead of straws, they had pasta, like long pasta.
Oh, that also doesn't last forever.
No.
Well, as I said, the paper ones up there, they say, well, they'll last an hour and a half.
Yeah,
and after that, maybe it's time for you to leave.
People are actually like chewing on them and eating their pasta straws.
Okay, so we'll get some more data and stuff on that and expanding it to cover more plastic. I wanted to discuss meeting attendance, and Jay printed up these sheets. You can pass them down.
Is it like a star system? Do we get stars next to our name?
Yes.
My whole concern here is that this is... This is a really diverse, and this covers 18 months. You can do some more additions, but we have a really diverse group here that has different expertise and different matters, and the chemistry is what makes this thing work. And if we're missing three people, well, yeah, we still have a quorum. We can still vote on something, but it's missing that quality that really sets this committee apart. And I don't know, I had to, you know, when we moved the meeting date to Tuesdays, prior to that, I had missed a couple meetings in 9 years, but I now have a biannual, semi-annual commitment for May and December. And so right off the bat, if we keep Tuesdays, I've been in this two meetings a year now, and it pisses me off. Frankly, really, I my thing is, we only have like maybe 12, 15, 16 hours a year to commit to. And why should that be so hard? We always know that it's on whatever, currently the first Tuesday. Maybe we want to think about changing that. We did it to accommodate Jay because of, well, like tonight, his son is in playing baseball and they're now in their championship. And that was fine. But I just want to bring up the two subjects. Do we want to, is there another night that would be good for us that doesn't interfere with another Tuesday for planning board, another Wednesday for other committees? And staff could really handle that part of it best. I could say two things, ask two things. Is this an inviolable date, this first Tuesday, or are there other dates or are there no other dates that would work for anybody?
Would it make sense for us to send out sort of a poll that has dates and times where there aren't other conflicting meetings and you all could pick what's better for you?
Well, we know the second Wednesday? I can't remember when it was we first met. And that worked for literally decades.
Okay.
You know, and I would be fine with going back with that. I don't know if Jay knows what his son's schedule is going to be 6 months from now.
I would say don't worry about what Jay's schedule is. If you think there's a different day that's better for this committee to be at the meeting, then the staff will figure it out, whether Jay is still your liaison or it's someone else, or you know what I mean? If there's a day that works for you but not for your liaison, then feel free to propose it.
And the second thing, does the town have any criteria for, you're on a commission now, we expect you should have at least 60%, 70% attendance?
There's no criteria, but when it comes up time for reappointment, the town clerk always asks us to give an attendance report.
Okay.
And that attendance report goes to the council for when they reconsider whether you will be reappointed.
Okay.
So that there isn't a hard and fast or a rule,
yep.
But we do keep, this is why we have the spreadsheet that says when you are, because we have to keep track, and it goes when you ask to be reappointed at this time.
So we don't need to come up with anything like that, that the present mechanism is adequate for doing that?
Well, I don't know that you as a committee have the authority to sort of take someone off the committee. So even if you like put in your bylaws, everyone has to be here 80% of the meetings for the year, I don't know that you would have any way to force that as a committee. Right? That's a council decision.
Well, let's not make enemies then.
So, yeah, I mean.
No, it's just, I did want to emphasize that it's a very unusual group here, and the different areas of expertise, I think is really, I've been, for my 9 years, it's really the most diverse. And so I just want to, make sure that continues, that's all.
But if you do want to consider other days and times, let Jay know, and we'll try to figure out something else that might work better for everybody.
Maybe you could send out a poll then.
Yeah.
Let's do that. And I would also just remind you what Wednesday it was that we were meeting that worked out for everybody for so many years.
Was it the first? Yeah, you used to be on the first week of the month.
All right.
I do have a localized impact now that I didn't have then, so.
On Wednesdays?
On Wednesdays, yes.
Okay, well that's why we're gonna do a poll.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And we'll figure out too, we don't like to have more than two committee meetings at a time because we hold them
planning board particularly.
We also don't love to have them at the same time as like a council meeting in case you guys want to go to the council meeting, but we'll figure out some time slots that might work and send it out.
Well, that would be great, thank you. Next in new business is the election of officers. Does anybody have any thoughts about what they would like to do? I'd be willing to stay on, but if somebody else wants to be president, that's okay for me. I'm not going to hold on to it tenaciously, but I'm willing to do it. So that's all. That's as far as I want to go to lead any discussion. What do you think, Mary? You want to
I'm willing to stay, but if you want to be...
Sounds like a motion. Let's do it.
I think the present leadership is doing a great job.
Sure, let's keep it just as it is.
Yeah. All right, we need a formal motion.
I make a motion to renominate David and Mary and
Jennifer for secretary.
For another term.
Second?
I'll
second.
Any discussion, further discussion? All right.
I thought you've all been doing a great job. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Update from staff on planning department activities and changes.
I suppose the biggest change is that I am leaving, which you probably all know. My last day is actually this Friday. Other than that, I don't necessarily have an update on anything else, unless you have questions about anything that's happening in the planning department.
I do have a question. I heard that, and we may have heard or seen a commercial application by Scott Hallberg in West Kingston, and I heard that application, I don't even remember what it was about, that particular application, but I heard that the planning board is allowing commercial developments to be reviewed as residential subdivisions. Is that possible?
No. Okay, so that it's on Fairgrounds Road where the turf farm is. It's an industrially zoned property, industrial one.
Which side of Fairgrounds?
It is on the east side of Fairgrounds Road.
Like where?
So abutting the railroad station,
so
basically
like
between Fairgrounds and the railroad track.
Okay.
It's a long, skinny turf farm right now.
Okay.
It's about 14 acres. So Scott Hallberg bought the property. He originally came to the planning board with a pre-application concept that he was calling the Fairgrounds Commerce Park, and it had several buildings and parking as a pre-application. So pre-application with the planning board is where the potential developer comes and discusses an idea. The planning board discusses the idea with them, gives them any feedback issues, so on and so forth, but there's no decision.
I think TRC also saw, was that before or after that meeting?
TRC after. So pre-applications don't go to the TRC, they go right to the planning board. So they had this meeting, they talked about the concept of this commerce park. And then Scott Hallberg came back and said, well, I don't really want to do it as a full-scale development, I just want to subdivide the property and sell off pieces. And at that point, he put in an application for a subdivision. It wasn't a residential subdivision, it's industrial, it's just a subdivision of land.
But it's zoned for industrial.
It's
so
zoned
it
for industrial.
It can't be considered a residential subdivision.
It's not residential, it's just a subdivision.
So you're dividing
one big industrial lot
small.
Into five
that
small
would
industrial lots.
That would be considered a major land development project, wouldn't it?
It would not. Mm-hmm. A subdivision is the division of land. A major land development project is development of land, and those are different definitions.
Having plans for buildings, that makes it a
correct.
Major development
but
project.
But that's in the groundwater protection. So wouldn't you have to have a sense of how they're going to protect groundwater with multiple
when they develop
buildings?
It, right. So the way it works procedurally is that it would be a minor subdivision where they can split the land as long as it meets the standards of the zoning ordinance. And you know the thresholds for the subdivisions are met, the six standards or five standards. They can subdivide, and then once each individual property comes in for development, it would go through development plan review at that point.
But that's like building a subdivision, a residential subdivision, and not having the opportunity to review the BMPs and protection measures that apply to the whole property.
So the planning board has said that they want to see a traffic study and is reviewing this with some critical eyes, not just
and water, it's public water and sewer.
They are talking about public and water. Public water.
So the planning board will be looking at it to consider all the improvements that need to be made to accommodate any commercial use.
They are looking at it to determine whether they can make positive findings on the five required findings, which are consistency with a comp plan, consistency with zoning, no significant environmental impact, has access to a public roadway, and does not create lots that are not built.
But how do you know what the impacts are going to be unless you know what types of businesses are going in there and how large they are?
Which is why you don't consider those impacts until development, because then you know the dozens of businesses and the buildings and the parking. At time of subdivision, you don't need to know that. Same with residential subdivision. If you were just subdividing a residential lot in town and you created two 15,000 square foot lots, we wouldn't require you to tell us if it's going to be single family or duplexes. We don't know what that is.
So in the subdivision, or in, where is the definition of just subdivision?
It's in the Subdivision and Land Development Review Act in the state law.
Isn't it minor in nature?
It is.
There's not any just any subdivision.
Minor subdivision is when you create five or less lots. It doesn't talk about whether it's residential or industrial. Major subdivision is when you create six or more lots. Doesn't matter if it's residential or industrial.
There's a similar project with a property on Kingstown Road that's being proposed for as a commercial lot. But even in TRC, they came back twice. First time, they had not done groundwater testing. Second time, it wasn't actually settled in that there was the number of parking places required would not allow for delivery trucks to turn around. So they're saying, okay, well, we'll make sure that delivery can only be done after business hours. But it went to the planning board, and I know they discussed it this past Tuesday, but I don't know, or last week, what they decided.
They haven't done anything with that one yet.
Because they would refuse, both meetings at TRC, they refused to say what businesses were going to go in there, because they said, well, we're talking to two different clients, and they wouldn't devote to
you. Well, and you can't base even a development plan review application on the tenant. It has to be based on the use. So they said it's going to be a retail use, and this is the size, because all of our standards relate to retail use, and this is
okay.
The size.
Okay.
So they don't have to tell us if it's going to be a dollar store or a Gap. It's just retail use based on the size, because that's what our standards are based on.
So the other one, is that also retail use?
Fairgrounds Road is all industrial.
Okay.
And retail is not allowed in industrial.
Okay.
But there are a suite of uses that are allowed in industrial, and they range from solar or battery storage, which might not produce any traffic or cars, all the way to light manufacturing or office, right? So at this point, the request is strictly to divide the land to be in a way that's consistent with zoning. And like I said, when each one of those parcels comes up for review, it'll be reviewed as development plan. That's the process.
I would simply observe that I've had a chance to talk to the town solicitor's office on this and talk to the folks in the planning department. I am comfortable that the town is proceeding with all due caution, using every rule available to it to ensure that we do not allow something to sneak up on us. That's not to say that the law is going to give us as much protection as the law gives us when we've got a development plan to review. But we're not just saying it's only lines on a map, who cares? We're saying these lines have consequence, and to the fullest extent of the law, we're going to try to make sure that those consequences are taken into consideration as the approval is considered.
When a residential subdivision is approved, it's approved based on utilities that are there, water and sewer, the location of the house.
That's not correct, actually. A residential subdivision, unless it's a flexible design residential project, does not require showing the location of the house.
Well, usually they show a building footprint.
But it's
an envelope where the house
If it's a minor
there.
Subdivision, they hardly ever show. They show an envelope, right? So it has to be within this area, generally.
Right.
But the board does not approve the footprint of the house or where it is or the size of the house.
Primarily, we review major ones.
And the major ones, also, if it was not a sort of flexible design residential project or a conservation, that's another term for that, if it wasn't that, if it was just strictly a major subdivision with road creation, again, you wouldn't see the houses there because it's not a land development project, it's just a subdivision. And you're looking at the impacts of dividing the lots and the infrastructure that's put in and not the impacts on individual properties.
But you would see the approved septic system locations.
You would see the test pit locations.
Right. And you know what type of system they're going to be using.
And you would get the DEM suitability.
Right. Right. So that's a lot more than what you're getting now. And
it's
the same level of protection as a full development plan, but it isn't.
No, I certainly didn't say that. That's certainly not the case.
So
certainly not the case.
Do you have the ability to require a development plan?
not at this point. What we do have the ability to do is to look at the infrastructure needs that those sites will require. The road, the sewer.
The water.
The water. That's about it. Electrics.
So theoretically,
so
you
could. Those are the things that the planning board is looking at. They've asked for a traffic study, like Rob said, to look at traffic impacts. They have asked for a plan to extend water and sewer. Those things haven't been worked out yet.
So you could technically have five light industrial in a GA.
Could be five heavy, to the fullest extent possible.
Could be any of the uses in the IMD1. And then once those uses are proposed, then each use would be reviewed against the standards in the groundwater protection overlay district in that section of the ordinance. So once those uses are proposed and you actually go through the site planning process, that's when you apply the GPOD standards to that location.
How can I do a traffic study without knowing the type of
that
further shows that the traffic studies are highly speculative.
The planning board has asked them to take a maximum capacity, highest intensity use look at a traffic study.
It is a truly problematic situation.
Well, it sounds like it's allowed to move forward so far.
But we can't stop it. We have no law that says no.
Well, it sounds like
a
zoning change is needed then.
It's a state statute problem.
We don't have the authority to say you may not subdivide because you haven't told us what you're going to do. We don't have a state law that says you may not subdivide unless we're satisfied. We have a state law that says you may subdivide if these five conditions are met. And all we can do is read those five conditions and try to read them as strictly as we can or as fairly as we can under the circumstances.
And the zoning ordinance has built in this process, which is used on all existing lots today, where when the lot actually is developed, it goes through development plan review, and that's the time when all of those impacts are
mitigated. And to be honest with you, that's been the sort of crux of the debate in town hall and with attorneys, is do we simply rely on that second backstop, or do we try to do all we can now to ensure that we're getting the best possible information? When we come down on, we're going to try now for all of the best information we can. We may not have powerful tools, we may not have sharp knives here, but we're going to assume what we've got. Mm-hmm. What we've got is the ability to ask the questions and pointedly, you're right, a traffic study that is speculative is a speculative traffic study, but we've got the right to ask for it, we will ask for it, and we'll make sure that it is a reasonable study to the extent that it can be evaluated, or to the extent that it can be produced and evaluated. It will be deemed reasonable. If those things aren't met, we've got a problem, we have maybe an inability to answer the question, is it economic or is it environmentally impactful? And, you know, to the extent that it may have drawing the lines, is drawing the lines going to have an impact on the aquifer?
It's just that the size and shapes of the properties.
That's
correct. Determines what could go in there.
That's correct.
How many subdivided lots in the 15 acres?
Five. Which is what makes it a minor subdivision.
Yeah.
And they're not creating a street, they have all the frontage, so it's a minor subdivision with no street frontage. So there's five lots.
Interesting.
Yeah. When you work with the tools you've got, stuff.
Look
for a
change
in zoning, maybe it's a
subdivision. Last big thing is next meeting date and agenda items. The next meeting date, as it stands now, is first Tuesday, which is August 6th, 6 o'clock. And as far as agenda items, I've written down the ones that we want to continue, and we're going to add the meeting poll info, but I have written down all the things about information on the legislation, the bag ordinance, et cetera. So if anybody has any other ideas for agenda, either mail them directly to Jay or to me. So usually he wants that information a week before, the Tuesday before, because he makes up the packets for Thursday or Friday. So in general, does anybody else have anything to add before we adjourn?
I'd like to wish best wishes on your behalf.
Thank you.
Yes.
Definitely. Okay. It is 20 minutes before 8. Meeting adjourned.